सवितुर्वरेण्यं भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। May we meditate on that Supreme Being who dwells in the hearts of all. He is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move, and have our being. May He illumine our hearts, and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace. We have been studying the Viveka Chudamani, or the crest jewel of discrimination, by a seer philosopher, Shankara. I mentioned seer philosophers to make a distinction rather between philosophy in the Western sense and philosophy in the Eastern sense. Philosophy in the West is speculative, and philosophy in the East, the word is darshana, means vision, experience. There is the attempt made in the West to arrive at the ultimate reality through the process of reasoning, and which I may call, as it is said in logic, inductive process of reasoning. From the known, what we see and observe, we try to find the unknown. Whereas darshana, vision or experience, is something you directly experience, and then there is the deductive process, then trying to explain this universe, explain man, its relation to universe, to God, and so forth. But first they have the experience of the total reality. And of course there is also this difference. For instance, you may ask, why do we have to see the reality? The effect in life. You see, man is hungering. Man is hungry. Everybody is hungry for something he does not know what. So he runs after this or that and everything. And ultimately, finds nowhere, but again ultimately comes to this understanding that in the infinite alone is fulfillment. And that infinite again, as he struggles to find, he finds him within himself. And this is the history of all religions, Christianity or Buddhism or Hinduism or Islam. Ultimately, they find that truth they are seeking within themselves. Atman, self, the real self. And that Atman again is not the self separate from yourself or another self, but that self is one with Brahman, what you call Brahman or God, or any word you may use, the reality. And so this reality is to be experienced, then only the fulfillment comes, as it is said in the Upanishads, what are the effects of such experience? The knots of ignorance are cut asunder. We are in ignorance all the time, no matter how intellectual you may be, no matter if you have all the encyclopedic knowledge in your mind, in your intellect, still in ignorance, until you see the reality, you experience the reality. And so the knots of ignorance are loosened. All doubts cease to exist. You see, there will always be doubts. But all doubts cease to exist only when you have experienced the reality, not otherwise. But doubts, again, must be healthy doubts. In this sense, you may doubt, but go on experimenting, go on struggling, follow the spiritual discipline, until you are hungry for God, hungry for the reality, when all your interests are gone except the interest for God. When you realize He is the treasure of your life, and your heart must be where your treasure is, and not by study, not by much learning, you know, na medhaya na bahuna srutena, not by intellect, nor by the study of many scriptures, but by whom is this attained? By Him whom the Atman chooses. Here again, you come to what you may call, in English, the doctrine of divine grace. But this, whom does the Lord choose? Whom does the Atman choose? He who longs for Him. That is the one condition, to long for Him, yearn for Him. You know, whenever Sri Ramakrishna would be asked how to find God, His one answer was, yearn for Him with a longing heart. And anybody, having that yearning, that longing, can find God, can realize the Atman. Sri Ramakrishna said, everyone can find the Atman, everyone can realize God. But he has seen. He has to long for Him. You see, you may practice spiritual disciplines, but you must have that one purpose. You have to create that desire within yourself in such a way that you feel you cannot live without God. Life is vain without Him. Sri Ramakrishna, by His own life example, showed that. You'd pray, Mother. He didn't know, he didn't study any scripture, he didn't know anything. But he wanted to know if there is God. And so he would weep and cry and long all day. And then when the evening would come, he'd say, another day is gone and I have not seen you. You know, my master used to say a very interesting thing. He used to say, do you think God is a commodity like potatoes and onions that you can buy with such price? So he even said, so much japam, so many hours of meditation and so forth, you cannot buy God. But why? You have to practice those spiritual disciplines in order that you can grow in yourself that yearning, that longing. I cannot live without you. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, people shed jug full of tears for their attachments of the world. But how many shed a few tears for God? I did not say all the effects that come. First, doubt ceases to exist, ignorance vanishes. All the effects of your deeds, good and bad, in the past, what you may have done, they are all wiped out. You are a free soul. And you have the blissful consciousness. Hear what Shankara says. With a controlled mind and an intellect which is made pure and tranquil, you must realize the Atman directly within yourself. Know the Atman as the real I. You see, we are living within the empirical self. And you see, as long as we are in the three states of consciousness, dreaming, dreamless sleep and waking, we are living within that empirical self, within this relative universe. The reality remains unknown. Reality remains on the background. Only by transcending these, you can know the real self, Atman. God, Brahman. And thus you cross the shoreless ocean of worldliness whose waves are birth and death. You see, this birth and death, this is only a philosophical idea that we have to reincarnate again and again until we realize the Atman. So everyone will realize the Atman sometime or other. But until you do it, this birth and death and concomitant effects, birth, death, miseries, happiness, and all that, frustration, the real fulfillment comes when you cross beyond this worldliness, beyond this birth and death, and realize the Atman. In the Atman, there is no birth or death. Live always in the knowledge of identity with Brahman and be blessed. Now I tell you, what I am talking to you is not theory. It's something we have watched with our eyes and ears. Yet sat at the feet of such people. Who lived in that blissful consciousness. One disciple of Sri Ramakrishna said to us, I can see the Atman, I can feel my Atman separate from this body. And that Atman again is everywhere. Of course, again, these great ones, come down from that consciousness occasionally to teach us. You see, otherwise they couldn't teach. A Christ also has to come down to a lower level of consciousness in order that he could teach and preach. It was my master who said to me at one time, you know, when I live in that consciousness, and you don't know that he's living in that consciousness, not that he's become unconscious of everything. No. You see him sitting and talking, but in another consciousness, in another plane. And you could feel that, you know, we used to feel Atman or God, it can be realized so easily, just like a fruit in the palm of your hand. In that presence, you could feel that. He said, when I live in that consciousness, How can I teach? I see God playing in so many forms. Who am I to teach whom? How can God teach God? But then he said, I come down. Then I see your mistakes. Then I teach you how to grow to that divine consciousness. And there is another example of another disciple. The cat came into the room and he bowed down. His disciple came, was his attendant, and he bows down to him. And this disciple says, but Maharaj, why are you doing that? I am your disciple, don't you know that? And he said, look here, how can I help? First thing I see Brahman, then I see you. You see, there are people living also today like that. No speculation, no theories, no bound down and limited within the empirical self. With a controlled mind and an intellect which is made pure and tranquil. What does that mean? What is purity? How can your mind and intellect be pure and tranquil? Holy Mother taught a prayer, which is a wonderful prayer. She said, pray that you may be free from all cravings except the desire for God. Be freed from all cravings, from all desires. Nirbhasana. You see, that it is vasana, it is the desires, the cravings that obstruct our view. And cravings of many different kinds and natures. You see, you go to practice meditation or concentration, your mind is distracted because you are full of desires. When you become free from all desires, then that yearning comes. Lord, I want you. Nothing else. You go to any religion, it's the same truth. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity except to love God. You know, I'll tell you something. Even what you may call ecstatic vision of God, nothing compared to this state of experience that Shankara is speaking here. You see, one disciple of Sri Ramakrishna said to us, you know, visions, and he had many kinds of visions. You know, visions come and go. Yes, it's wonderful, you experience some bliss and all that, but they come and go. The real thing is, when you live in the experience of the Atman and Brahman, and that bliss is always there. And of course that comes again through that love. So mind and intellect, pure and tranquil. There's nothing else in the mind and intellect except God. And in fact, you see, when you find the Atman, you transcend the mind and intellect. Thus you cross the shoreless ocean of worldliness, whose waves are birth and death, live always in the knowledge of identity with Brahman, and be blessed. Man is in bondage because he mistakes what is non-Atman for his real self, you see. This is caused by ignorance. What is ignorance? This non-self, what you may call the empirical self, and upon which, you see, all your psychology of today also is based, the empirical self. And you take that to be the real self and you are in ignorance. And then you write books on psychology. All limited within that empirical self. Man is in bondage because he mistakes what is non-Atman for his real self. This is caused by ignorance. Hence follows the misery of birth and death. Through ignorance, man identifies the Atman with the body, taking the perishable for the real. Therefore, he nourishes his body and anoints it and guards it carefully. He becomes enmeshed in the things of the senses like a caterpillar in the threads of his cocoon. Deluded by his ignorance, a man mistakes one thing for another. Lack of discernment will cause a man to think that a snake is a piece of rope. When he grasps it in this belief, he runs a great risk. The acceptance of the unreal as real constitutes the state of bondage. Pay heed to this, my friend. You see, when you see the reality, then you see all this appearance has no reality. Behind all this appearance, there is Brahman, God, Atman, the Self, everything. As I said, this Swami, you see Brahman everywhere. And then, of course, again, you'd be just speechless, living in that unity, oneness. The Atman is indivisible, eternal, one without a second. You see, my Atman and your Atman and the Atman here also, it's all one. We cannot conceive with our mind. You see, it is beyond our mind. The mind has to be very subtle, purified, before one can grasp it. And because, you see, we always, and we can only think, we have no other way, we can only think in terms of time, space and relativity. But here, in this, when it comes to the reality, when it comes to the eternal truth, there is no time or space or relativity beyond all that. That is why mind cannot conceive. You know, they are giving ideas and conceptions of God. One theologian says, describes God in one way, another theologian describes God in another way. And, of course, they give their reason, and when you see, they are so good, wonderful. But what guarantee is there that the God that they are talking about is the same as reality? Because that God that he is talking about is an idea, nothing else. So it is Vastu Tantra we speak in Sanskrit. God is Vastu Tantra. Atman is Vastu Tantra. Not an idea, not a conception, a fact. The Atman is indivisible, eternal, one without a second. It is eternally made manifest by the power of its own knowledge. Its glories are infinite. The veil of tamas hides the true nature of the Atman, just as an eclipse hides the rays of the sun. You see, here comes the philosophical idea of the Atman covered by Maya or ignorance. This Maya, of course, this ignorance, has two aspects. In one aspect, it covers the reality. In another aspect, it creates something new. That is, the sense of ego has come into us. Now again, this Maya is composed of three gunas, tamas, rajas, and sattva. Tamas veils it. That power of tamas veils the Atman. When the pure rays of the Atman are thus concealed, the deluded man identifies himself with his body, which is non-Atman. Then rajas, which has the power of projecting illusory forms, afflicts him sorely. It binds him with chains of lust, anger, and the other passions. His mind becomes perverted. His consciousness of the Atman is swallowed up by the shark of total ignorance. Howsoever you may try to tell those people about the Atman, no. Nothing can convince them, because eclipsed by the total ignorance. As if it's growth. You have to grow into that. Yielding to the power of rajas, he identifies himself with the many motions and changes of the mind. You see, he says, now I am angry, I am that, I am angry. And that's that. Good. Total eclipse by total ignorance. That's not you. That's not the Atman. That's your ignorance, identifying yourself with the moods of the mind. And you are changing. All the time. You see, this empirical self is changing all the time. Never the same. Yielding to the power, therefore he swept hither and thither, now rising, now sinking, in the boundless ocean of birth and death, whose waters are full of poison of sense objects. This is indeed a miserable fate. The sun's rays bring forth layers of cloud. By them the sun is concealed, and so it appears that the clouds alone exist. In the same way, the ego, which is brought forth by the Atman, hides the true nature of the Atman, and so it appears that the ego alone exists. On a stormy day, the sun is swallowed up by thick clouds, and these clouds are attacked by sharp, chill blasts of wind. So when the Atman is enveloped in the thick darkness of tamas, the terrible power of rajas attacks the deluded man with all kinds of sorrows. Here are some questions. If Atman or soul is ever free, what is it that is liberated when the body dies? Is ever free. But when is it that is, what is it that is liberated when the body dies? There is nothing to be liberated. However free. And as long as there is ignorance, there is no liberation. One dies, again is born. The mind and the character, all the sanskaras, the impressions of his deeds go with him. And he is born. And then again he goes through struggles until he realizes that he is the Atman ever free. When he realizes that the Atman is ever free, what is there to be liberated? He's already liberated. He's always liberated. He doesn't know. Swami, will you give us a definition, your definition of a mystic, and do you think all men are potential mystics? Well, mysticism is that which believes that God can be known and experienced. And a mystic is he who is struggling to experience also is a mystic. And potentially, yes, everybody is a mystic in the sense, as I quoted Sri Ramakrishna, everyone can realize the Atman. Everyone can realize God. Only, of course, you can't unless you desire for it. But that desire has to be very strong. There has to be yearning for it. If you have, you know, Sri Ramakrishna used to say, if any fiber is out, you cannot have that thread go through the eye of the needle. So if you have other interests than God, no, nothing can help you. But then, what about our worldly interests? Make them all centered in God. Do your duties as worship of God. Look at your family as the family of God. What does renunciation mean? Not to run away, but to fill up everything with the presence of God. That which makes you forget God is to be avoided. And it's not that you are meditating all the time, no. But in a sense, you are keeping the collectedness of God all the time. You have to come to that stage of unfoldment. When you are eating, you have the presence of Brahman there. Every action is to be dedicated. And thus you have to keep that continuity of consciousness. And you have to come to that stage of unfoldment. Now, these two questions are written questions. So please ask.
The oral questions from the audience are being revoiced due to their being off mic during the original recording.
Yes.
Do I understand that Vedanta is non-dual or contains a non-dual idea?
No. Vedanta is not merely non-dual. Vedanta embraces all aspects. Dualism, qualified monism, and non-dualism. Then also there are many other aspects, you know. And there we call they're all stages, different stages of unfoldment, but the highest truth is non-dualism. But Vedanta embraces all.
What is meant by the non-dual?
Oh, that's what I've been talking about. Atman and Brahman one. There's one reality, Brahman alone is. And I am that.
If we cannot realize God with this mind, what part of the mind realizes God?
Mind, purified.
The purified mind, Atman?
Purified mind. You see, as long as there are those impressions of past deeds, you see, subconscious mind, until you have gained control over them, and that is meant by the mind becoming purified. In other words, if you keep your mind centered in God, your mind would be colored, you know, by the qualities of God or attributes of God or whatever God is. You see, you get that coloring. So with that coloring, you can have the vision of God. In the yoga aphorisms, the principle has been pointed out that how, by controlling the waves of the mind, the truth becomes revealed to you. In the mind, of course. But then, you see, Sri Ramakrishna used to say that that mind, that pure mind, is something not the same as this mind. In other words, you transcend this mind. You know, in language it's very difficult to explain or express these truths. But as you follow, as you do, then your mind becomes subtle.
I read that each one of the disciples of Ramakrishna were given special or individual names.
Oh yes, that's not only the disciples of Ramakrishna, but you see always, each individual has a different conception of God. For instance, a Christian would love to worship Christ as God, you see. And so, the name of Christ is given to chant and repeat. So similarly, different individuals have different conceptions of God, and Vedanta does not try to force any idea of God, another idea of God, into anybody.
But I read that he gave special names to a person because that would correspond to their own way of thinking.
Yes, that's what I have been trying to explain. According to the temperament of the individual.
How can we, as individuals, find that out?
How can you find out without a guru? Sri Ramakrishna gave that. His disciples gave. We are giving. So you have to have a teacher, a guru. Otherwise, how do you find out? You see, you can't learn even the alphabet without a teacher. And when it comes to the supreme knowledge, you can find yourself. How can it be possible?
In the Christian faith, do they have the equivalent of a guru?
Yeah, I don't know, but what you may call that apostolic succession that there is amongst the Catholics.
Today?
I don't know. I'm not a Christian, so I don't know. I know of Christianity only by reading the Bible, that's all I know.
How do we find that teacher?
I don't know. How you find your teacher? Seek and you shall find.
I've read in a book that when the student is ready, a teacher or master will appear.
Oh yes, you mean that when the people is ready and master comes, here I am. Drops from the sky and says, "Here I am, your guru." Huh?
Is it true?
They don't make it so mysterious.
Is grace the only hope that can help? When a person is in that horrible state of mind that you described in the end, where a state of tamas comes in and...
No, I would not say at that time grace. At that time I'd say struggle. Struggle yourself. But here is the point, you see. We have a saying which my master quoted. You have the grace of God. You have the grace of your guru, and you have the grace of his devotees. But for the grace of one, you may be ruined. And what is that grace of one? Your own mind. You see, God has His grace upon you. If you have a guru, you have the grace of your guru. And of course the devotees also love you. But if you don't have the grace of your own mind, then you are ruined.
तमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ओम मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट अस मे गाइड अस मे गिव अस स्ट्रेंथ एंड राइट अंडरस्टैंडिंग मे वी हैव लव फॉर ऑल मे आवर स्टडी ब्रिंग लाइट अनटू अस ओम शांति 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 पीस पीस